morning, campers. How are we doing today? I asked Jeff just for some parting words of wisdom before I came up to talk to you guys this morning, and he said, don't mess up. I said, thank you for the encouragement, Pastor Jeff. You've always been there. I have a confession to make. Every so often, we find ourselves in a place that's strange, unusual, uncomfortable, not our normal routine, and we wonder, what did we do to get here? We look around at our surroundings, our circumstances, and there's no way that we would ever stumble into a place like that in and of our own will or account, which usually means that somebody influenced in some way to get to this place, whatever this place might be for you. This happened to me recently after we had moved here to LaPorte. We had left our home in the beautiful Colorado Rocky Mountains, where we lived at the base of a ski resort, and we came through this wonderful state called Nebraska. I'm sorry, who's ever clapping. We have an altar. You can come forward for prayer, Rose. I'll meet you first. We came through Nebraska, and if you've ever been to Nebraska, you know that you can drive off the highway for 30 minutes and just drive right back on. It's all the same. It's all good. So we came to Illinois, drove through a flash flood warning, got here to LaPorte. We went into our place, and we started looking around, and we realized there were some things, some essentials that we needed in order for life to exist here in LaPorte. So my wife looked at me and said, this dreaded word, this hateful word, this evil word that is nowhere in the Bible. I searched. It's not in Greek. It's not in Hebrew. It's not in Latin. It's not in Aramaic. She looked at me and she said, shopping. I am out of my element when I'm at the shopping complex. So we were told by Emily and some others that we should go to the Lighthouse Mall up there in Michigan City. That place is evil. There is no good in this complex, because we wandered around this thing for hours upon hours, and eventually I would just walk in one store. Oh, it looks the same. Walk in, go on to the next. And I didn't know there's a difference between American Eagle and what's another clothing store? Hollister, Banana Republic. I didn't know these were all different stores, so I had a light go on for me. But I am not a shopper. It brings out the worst in me. I once did this thing on this Black Friday, you know, this thing that's coming up. I once made this terrible mistake, and I'm still repenting for it. But I got up early in the morning, and I went to Target to do the Black Friday thing just to say that I've experienced this. And women, you're ruthless. You're mean. I'm still in therapy over this experience. Carts were banging into my cart. There was stuff in my cart that I didn't know how it got there, but I bought it because I was too embarrassed to take it out. So it's just not my thing. When I go to the Kroger's, I can remember three things: milk, bread, eggs. You add a fourth to the list, and I'm in there for 9 hours because I don't know where it is. And somehow, you women, you have this ability to just walk right by the Krispy Kreme donut section. God didn't give me that gift. And I stop, and I'm amazed at all the different flavors, and I got to sample and try, and then I'm realizing I should probably pay for these. Yeah, I'm convinced that whoever developed this whole Kroger shopping experience, one of our dear saints in the church saw me wandering through the store, and she must have known this about me, because she came up and introduced herself to me and handed me a printout of where everything was in the grocery store. I must have looked that lost. It's just not my place. And sometimes we get in those places where, you know it's not for you, and it never fails for me. I already hate being there. But then I go to checkout, and you know what happens at the checkout, right? There's 178 people shopping and two people checking you out. So I'm standing there for a while, and it never fails. I always get stuck behind the person with the all produce cart, or the person with like 50 coupons and only five items, and they're trying to match the coupon to the item. You know who you are. Many of you have done that. Or I get stuck even worse behind Kelly Ziegler. That's a rough day. Sometimes when we find ourselves in these places, it takes us out of our comfort zones, and it pushes us to do something maybe we've never done before. It pushes us to another place to maybe try something, do something, or experience something that we have never tried, done, or experienced before. As we get into this series on evangelism, we're going to talk a little bit more about what that means. We're going to try to simplify it for you here over the next few weeks. And as we approach evangelism, there are many different styles and many different ways to talk about the Lord try to help other people bump into Jesus? Perhaps maybe you've tried one of these ways. Check this out and see if this pin relates to you whatsoever.
Evangelism is not for the weak, all right? I should know. I wrote the book. Self-published. Most Christians, they are just good for bake sales and potluck dinners. But I'm telling you this right now. It takes a lot of moxie to grab a non-believer by the shirt collar and throw them in the front doors of a church and say, hey, try living out your heathen life in front of a holy God that way. Share my faith. Okay, that's a lie. People don't even know I'm a Christian. I want to. Again, another lie. I hardly share, much less have the will to do anything else. Okay. Now, if there was pizza and ice cream every time there was faith sharing, I'd do it. That's a lie. I'm lactose intolerant. Again, another lie. I'm just too cheap to buy dairy. Bottom line, sharing my faith makes me sweaty.
Tip number 95. Use big church words like transubstantiation.
Heathens get confused easily, and the more confused they are, the more ashamed they are. The more ashamed they are, the more apt they are to make a decision for Jesus Christ.
I believe it's a responsibility, no. The privilege, no. The glorious privilege of every believer to share their faith with others. That's why I share my faith with everyone I come in contact with.
Everyone, really?
Yeah, everyone.
How do you do that?
Check out my shirt. Can't read it? Try this glove. Not working for you? How about this bracelet? No comprendo? Estazo estos. Driving behind me? Read my bumper sticker. Says, it's okay if you follow close. I'm going to heaven. Oh, you're my waiter or waitress? I got a tip for you. Surprise! It's the gospel. I mean, what do you want? Money or...
Evangelism is...
There are all different ways and all different kinds of crazy things that we have done in order to get the message of Jesus out into the hearts of people. In Matthew, the 13th chapter, starting in verse 1 through 3, if you have a Bible, go ahead and turn there. We're going to be there this morning. If not, there's Bibles on the back. Feel free to take one home, grab it, use it. Jesus says it this way, and I'm convinced that if Jesus were in our culture today, he would tell us that there are basically four different kinds of people. Each one of us falls into one of these groups as well. So as we go through this this story here, see where you are and see where we might fit into these words of Jesus. Matthew 13, 1 through 8. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by a lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it. When all the people stood on the shore, then he told them many things in parables, saying this. Now Jesus used always the very central elements that were common to the people of the day. So if he was here in the port, he would use something that we would all be able to relate to and understand. In this day, just like where we are in northern Indiana, farming was a key element for survival in first century Palestine. And Jesus said this, a farmer went out to sow seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly, but because the soil was shallow, when the sun came out, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among the thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still, other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop 160 or 30 times what was sown. He who has ears, let him hear. Now, evangelism is defined as this word, evangelizo. Now, this word appears 55 times in the New Testament, and it's always in connection to good news. A lot of times what we do is first thing in the morning, if you have the cell phone, the smartphone, any of these devices or gadgets, is we pick those up and we look at all the different people who have maybe contacted us, did stuff overnight, and our minds are just consumed with all different kinds of news. There's been research that says sometimes some of the first things that you read when you check out the Facebook, the whatever it is, whatever your thing is, your email, your pod, your whatever, that first message that you read will often set your tone for the rest of the day. And a lot of times on those things, that news can be either good or bad. In the gospel, evangelism is always described as good news, and there are 12 essential messages in evangelism, and they're all real short. It's either hope for the poor and downtrodden. It's about the coming of the birth of Jesus, the kingdom of God, future judgment of sin and rest for the righteousness, Jesus and his resurrection to life, peace with God through Christ, the word of the Lord, the faith and love of the saints, the mystery of God's eternal will, justification through faith, and the nations will be blessed through Abraham. Essentially, evangelism is always good news. It's not you should, but whether we take those two words and we redefine them as me too. A lot of us look at evangelism as you should do this, you should do that, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't be doing that. But when we flip that around and realize that we're part of that, we're that sinner, just like the song sang a little while ago, it's not you should, but it's me too. I'm there, I've been there, you've got stuff in your life, I've got stuff in my life, so let's link arms together and figure this life out together. Jeff's going to come up here for a minute. I'm going to illustrate this with you. Would you come up here, Pastor Jeff? Give Jeff a big round of applause, would you? All right, if you would stand right over here. Yeah, that's all right. Okay. You're going to stand right over here. Now, we're going to play this little game called Who's the Strongest Pastor? All right? And whatever I do, Jeff, I don't want you to let me pull you over to this side of the stage. Okay, no matter what, I'm going to pull you. Your job is to resist everything that I do. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to pull you over here, all right? So, see, I don't know if I could pull him, all right? I don't think, no matter how hard I forced him or pulled him, I could get him over to this side of the stage, could I? I think he's stronger than I am, so we'll just consent to that. You're stronger, all right? You can go over here and have a seat. Oh, now, wait a second. Look where he's standing. I've been waiting all week to do that. Sometimes we use our words and our messages forced to try to get people to come to some place that we are, we have been, or we have experienced. But rather, when we give people an arm and we walk the road of life with them, we end up in a much better place. Now, Jesus mentions there are four different types of ground. The first ground is the hard ground. This is the seed that hit the path. For the first time in American history, over the last decade, for the first time in American history, less than half of our country claims Christianity as their chief religion, as their religion of choice. In fact, if we take all the churches in the United States, lump the Sunday morning attendance together, and look at it 1 year from now, the fact of the matter is this, that churches are declining, not inclining. They are on the decrease. Part of this is because we've forgotten how to do that very thing. There is hard ground out there. When I was a youth pastor back in Pennsylvania, I took a group of 30 middle school students to the inner streets of Philadelphia, and we worked in a Puerto Rican mission there. And I would never, it was a learning experience for me. I would never do that again. But while we were there with 30 middle school students, talk about ADD overload, yeah, it was one of those kinds of trips. As we were there, one of our tasks was to go in and meet different people in different villages from all over the city, and then just learn some of the things, some of the needs that they have. We heard about this story from one of the Teen Challenge workers who was there with us, that there was this group of kids who were playing in the streets. And in Philadelphia, there's no green space, there's no open spaces. They just play wherever they can. They find a place and they play. Outside of each of the yards in most of the metro parts of Philadelphia, there are wrought iron fences, fences that block off this little territory where the kids have whatever grass or rock or whatever is there. And these are just not far, but maybe not even about the size of this stage from where these high-rise townhouses are. And that's where a lot of people live in the inner city. So these kids were playing in the street, and this man started a commotion. They heard this. The kids kind of turned about just another day in Philadelphia. This man walked out to the third floor window, opened the window, stood on the balance. All the kids turned and looked and watched as this man jumped to his death, the pole of the wrought iron fence within his right leg, and impaled him and came out the top of his left collar right here. And he sat there, and as he withered and died on the stake, all of these kids turned and watched this experience take place. They watched this man die. And as soon as the event was over, they went right back to playing. if they were unfazed, unchanged. Didn't even shake them up. There is hard ground because of the real circumstances of life that people are going through. These kids were unchanged. That's such a tragic thing. Now, if we saw that in real life, you and I might be a little shaken up about that. We might need counseling. The kids just went right back on playing. There was a 17-year-old girl who wrote this in her journal. She wrote, "I am told that God lives in me, but yet the reality of darkness and coldness and emptiness inside me is so great that nothing touches my soul." There was a wonderful person in the life of this individual, this hard girl. And we might be tempted often in our minds to think, well, that's part of the Bible. That's hard ground. Throw the seed and give up. Nothing's going to come of it. No fruit's going to come of the hard ground. Well, there's a wonderful individual in life, this person who kept nurturing this seed, kept trying to grow this seed, kept trying to spread the seed. And after a while, the words might seem impenetrable to a person such as this, but the seed kept being thrown. The seed kept getting out. She kept being nurtured and cultivated, and this person in her life loved her and cared for her. And finally, one of these seeds broke through. And the person that wrote in this journal that there's nothing that touches my soul because of the emptiness and darkness that resides inside is none other than the words of Mother Teresa, who went on to change an entire country and an entire time. In Matthew 13:18, the parable of the sower is explained this way. It says, "Listen then to what the parable of the sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes away and snatches what was sown in their heart." In other words, the seed did reach something, but something else came in and plucked out whatever that something was that had existed in there. This is the seed of the hard ground. The hard ground always leads to the wrong path. The hard ground always leads to the wrong path. No matter what type of ground or what type of experience we come from, the hard ground leads to the wrong path. But there's still hope. There's still hope. However, it's the job of the sower to continue to till the soil. You never give up. So we take the field. Not only is there hard ground, but there's shallow ground. These are the individuals who get connected in some way, perhaps to the emotional experience, perhaps to the big event, perhaps to the sermon, perhaps to the music. There's a connection somehow, but there's a shallowness in what takes place. You know, when you were in youth group and you went to the big event and you swore to God that you would go to India or Africa and all that, but your faith didn't last the bus ride home? That's this type of soil. Perhaps people come to an experience or something, but there's nothing that takes root, nothing that gets deep down in. And some of us have that kind of faith. Some of us have that kind of faith. We come and we experience a big thing and it works, and then by Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning, Sunday evening, we forget what happened on Sunday morning. Could it be that the shallow ground is shallow because it's toiled by shallow leaders? Let me give you some examples of this. If you pray this prayer, you'll get $5 million. If you send in 58 bucks a month, God will send you a blessing. If you just thank God enough, God will give you more. And of course it doesn't work. And then what happens in our life? Trouble comes our way. And this is our story because life gets hard. You go back to that substance. You have no idea that this decision would blow up your family. You have no idea that this decision, you had an idea that this decision would blow up your family, but we did it anyway. And we find ourselves again at the bottom of a bottle, on the steps of the courthouse, in the middle of a doctor's office, in the back of the cop car, on the front doors of the steps of a church, in the chair of an attorney's office, and we wonder, how did I get here? How did my life get so bad that I got here? Just like me in shopping, we find ourselves in a place that's unfamiliar to us because that seed was there, but it didn't get down deep because we stopped for the shallow things of life experience. Life will get hard. That's just true if you believe in God or not. Life is going to get hard. Even the scripture says, in this world you will find trouble. Life is going to get hard. You don't have to believe in God this morning to know that that's just true. No matter where you are in life, life will get hard. What have you leaned your life against so that when life does get hard, there's something in us, something deep, where the seed has planted deep, deep roots to survive those rocky, rocky places. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly, but because the soil was shallow, when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. We get scorched or shallow promises lead to rocky paths. There is still hope, however. It's the job of the sower to continue to throw the seed, to continue to till the soil, so we never give up. Take the field. Next, there's the thorny ground. The thorny ground represents two things, as the scripture tells us. The worries of this life, because life just happens. I know I want to control everything, but there's really so little that I'm in control of when I really stop and think about it. There's not a lot. So when life blows up, what I'm in control of, I'm not in control of. It's not me. It's not my ability to really control what happens tomorrow. Perhaps the storm that you're facing or you're encountering, it wasn't anything you did. It was somebody else's decision, and you're caught in the wind and the waves and the thunder and the rain of what somebody else did. Perhaps it is something you did, and you're wondering, why did I ever make the decision in the first place? And perhaps the storm of what we did causes somebody else pain. Perhaps that storm isn't any of your decision or anything you can control. It's completely out of your control, but those circumstances hound you every day. It's the thing that keeps you up at night. It's the thing that wakes you up in the middle of the night. It's the thing that makes you not fall asleep at night. All through my ministry, I had people often tell me the story where it says right before this, Jesus talks about, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And all through ministry, I always thought that that yoke was that image of the yoke between two oxen. There's an ox, and then there's a yoke, and wherever the one oxen goes, the other oxen goes, and they follow, and the parallel has been made that one ox is Jesus and we're the other ox, and as wherever Jesus goes, then so do we go. And that's probably a good analogy and probably a good understanding of the passage, but the passage is actually a little bit deeper than that, because we know that whenever the word yoke shows up in the Bible, that every rabbi in first century Palestine had a certain set of teaching that he or she would do. They would give you a set of whatever their thing was, and their teaching would be known as that rabbi's yoke. So whenever we see the word yoke in the New Testament, it really is referring to everything that Jesus taught us. It's the yoke of the rabbi Jesus. So when Jesus says, take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light, he's saying, I've got a better way. I've got a better way. The yoke of this world is going to bring you trouble. It's going to bring you empty promises. You're going to find yourself in one of those places. But the yoke of Jesus is going to give us a better way. There was a woman who we were working with, and she had gone through many life experiences, and her husband had just left her. She was in the midst of filing bankruptcy because of all the debt that she was going to be left with. Social services was coming to take her children away. She had little to no food, no money left in the bank account. Her car had just been repossessed. And this was her life story when some of the people that in our group were working with met her. And as we were talking to her, we asked her, well, is there a church around here that you might connect to? Is there a place around here, a church that you might find some hope in that could help you? And her response was simply this: the church, I already feel like crap. Why would I go to church? God help us from having people come to church who already feel like crap and leave feeling worse. The message of the gospel is good news. It's bump into Jesus. It's come and see. It's put an arm around and let's do life together, whatever the struggle is in life. And because thorny paths always lead to hurt and broken places. Those thorny paths of our life, they always lead us to those hurt and broken places where people come in and they already are going through so much. And they encounter this Jesus, and it's supposed to be good news. But sometimes we don't make it so good news. Instead of saying me too, we say you should. And that turns people away and turns people off. There's still hope, however. The job of the sower is to continue to throw the seed. So we never give up. We take the field. And finally, there's good ground. There is good ground. We understand what cultivation means in this context. Sometimes we throw the seed and it falls upon that right, perfect person. You know, when you share your faith and then people respond immediately and you feel, oh, this is so easy, I can do this, because there's good ground. And the seed gets planted and the roots come up and there's depth that comes and it produces a crop over and over and over again. How do people understand this? Some just do it naturally. Some just have this ability to say, come to church, meet Jesus, bump into Jesus. I found something better. Our job is to produce a harvest, not to necessarily produce the harvest, but to multiply it, to cultivate the soil. Even if the ground is hard, if it's rocky, if it's thorny, if it's good, did you notice our job never changed? We don't give up. Our job is still to throw that seed because we never know what that seed's going to hit. Maybe you were hard ground. Maybe you used to be hard ground. Or maybe you had that youth experience back when you were 15, 16 and went to the big event, got all emotional, but then life got in the way. And now maybe a different seed hits you, and now it's taken root, taken depth. Our job never changes. Just because we throw seed and it hits hard ground doesn't mean we give up. We keep throwing the seed. We keep sharing life. Jimmy was a high school boy who was a star athlete in one of the towns in Pennsylvania I worked in. Everybody knew him. I went to a basketball game. I met him. I was like, do you want to come to church? No, not interested. All right, well, I kept showing up at the game, and one, little by little, there were more youth who, you know, I would know as I went to the high school, and I went back to this guy, I'm going to call him Jimmy, but said, hey, Jimmy, you want to come to church? And about a year later, he said, all right, I'll come once just to get you off my back. So he came, and, you know, I don't know the reason you came in here this morning. Maybe it's because a loved one drug you, or your mom drug you, or somebody drug you. But he came just to get me off his back. So he showed up, and we had a great time, you know, talking, went out to lunch and everything. And then he quit coming for a while. So I went back to the game, and Jimmy met him again and said, Jimmy, do you want to show up? And he starts crying. There, right after the basketball game's over, he started crying. I thought it was because they'd lost the game. But Jimmy started telling me about his story. His mom and dad were in the middle of a nasty divorce. They wanted him as a 15-year-old boy to decide where he was going to live. Was he going to live with mom or was he going to live with dad? So they had put him right in the middle of the hatred they had for each other, and they put that on this kid. On top of this, his girlfriend was getting ready to break up with him that he'd known for a couple years because she wanted something different and something better. Now, Jimmy didn't know this, but Jimmy's girlfriend had actually started coming to our church. And so Jimmy and I, we started talking for a while, and he prayed, and so he came to church. His girlfriend wasn't there, and then we met for coffee the next week. And he said, yeah, I really want to go, but I'm really afraid because I'm not sure how my girlfriend's going to take it now that I'm going to church. And he didn't know that I knew, and I said, so who's your girlfriend? And he said her name, and I was like, I think you should invite her. And he's like, oh, I can't invite her. She thinks I'm this. She thinks I'm that. She thinks I'm, you know, this certain way, and I can't invite her. She'll never believe it. She'll never buy it. I was like, Jimmy, I think you should invite her. And he was like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I finally said, you know what? Let's just go invite her. She's sitting right over there. Let's go get her. And as we started going over to there, she stands up out of her seat, runs over, and Jimmy's excited, thinking that she's going to give him a hug. Well, she grabs me and says, oh, it's so good to see you. And Jimmy was like, well, how do you know her? And I was like, Jimmy, she comes to church. She comes to church. She's there every week. And he just broke down, and he lost it. He started crying. He started coming. The night before, Jimmy had gone into his dad's room, grabbed the pistol, drove out to a road out in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, put the gun to his head, and pulled the trigger, but it misfired. We don't know what's going on in the lives of the people that we encounter. And here's Jimmy, a broke young man, who just gets the opportunity to bump into Jesus, and his whole life was changed. A day before, he might not have been with us anymore, but his whole life was changed because somebody, his girlfriend, the church, his friends, were willing to throw seed and were willing to care about him beyond his circumstances. Dawn wandered into a church 8 years past the transgender operation. She was broken by the abuse of a mother and the bullies all through her life and schooling. Upon meeting the church leaders, they told her that she could come to church once she changed back to her original gender, the way God created. She left the church, adding them to her bully list, until a friend reached out to her. The hard ground became soft ground that led her to Christ, and now she shares her story of brokenness and healing through Christ all over the country. She is still a woman, but her heart has changed, and God is working through her. I was in prison, and you brought me laughter. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was hungry, and you fed me. I was alone, and you brought me company. I woke up every day with nothing but bad news, and you brought me good news. Evangelism is simply this. It's sharing the good news of the love of Jesus with everybody we encounter. It's something better. I found a better way. I found a different way. I tried all those other ways in life, and this is something better. It's something different. It's not you should. It's me too. You went through junk in your life? Guess what? Me too. You're going through something right now? Me too. You have an issue in your life? Me too. Come and see. Come. come and bump into Jesus. Meet this guy who loves you so much, unconditionally, that he will change your life. I can't change your life, but I know someone better who can. So come and see, bump into Jesus. Me too. It's time for our church to take the field and love every single person we come in contact with. And so many people will be talking about what